have a few more guests. This is, in case you needed a reminder, don't think you did, but we decided just in case. Big Ten, third straight shot at the national championship. SEC has done that before. Not lately. So we've gone to that SEC podcast guy to help us through this maudlin Monday afternoon where there's a lot of people struggling. Michael Bratton, the game's 2.5 hours away. I know you got the chicken wings and the popcorn and the pizza. You're all ready to watch. So help us get excited about this matchup between Indiana and Miami. I'm sorry, forgot who was in.
Yeah, I didn't realize there was a game tonight, Paul, but as soon as Ole Miss went down, I kind of already moved ahead to 2026. But the way I'm going to be viewing this game, I'd be curious to know if you would agree. I think SEC, obviously, you need a rooting interest. I'd say Kurt Cignetti, I think he's going to be a future SEC coach, whether it's Alabama, maybe in the near future, or Georgia when Kirby Smart decides to go to the NFL, or it's Miami, who I think if the SEC expands, I think Miami's a chief target there because we don't want the Big Ten to get in the Southeastern footprint. So future SEC coach or future SEC program, I'm going to go with the future SEC program. I think Miami wins tonight.
Okay, well, that's good. I'm looking over, I think it's your left shoulder, it's the right shoulder of the audience if you're watching. There's a book that came out about 12 years ago called My Conference Can Beat Your Conference, Why the SEC Still Rules College Football. I appreciate you putting that up. That book is not selling well right now.
We need an update, Paul. I mean, maybe the SEC can beat the
In fact... Yeah, there will be a new book out soon. It's in the works. A new Feinbaum book is in the works, but it won't have that title. I can assure you.
Nor should it, Paul. Nor should it.
So, Michael, I appreciate what you said a minute ago. Cignetti could end up a lot of places. If you had to guess, you mentioned two of the most prominent schools in the SEC. Georgia doesn't seem like they're anywhere close to an opening unless Kirby Smart does depart. Alabama, I was just asked about that. What do you make out of the Crimson Tide situation? They're the preseason number 17 pick, according to On3, next year.
Yeah, the way things are trending in Tuscaloosa, Paul, I say it could be as soon as this time next year that Cignetti is the Alabama coach, because let's say they can't get it done tonight, which they are – a big favorite. I don't think hardly anybody's picking Miami. If Indiana can't get it done and Indiana doesn't win a national championship, I think Cignetti is going to realize he's probably missed his one and only shot at Indiana, and it's time to come down to a real conference and a real program where he could compete annually for a national championship. And we know that's what Alabama fans are dying for, and quite frankly, they're not getting it under Kalen DeBoer. So I think by this time next year, Kurt Cignetti could be your next Alabama coach.
Wow. Well, listen, Coach DeBoer is doing a good job. We all support him. And they moved up in the portal as the portal started to close. I mean, I think they're in the top 20 now.
Oh, wow. Top 20. Okay. So new standard there in Title Town, or at least that's what it used to be referred to. Now I think it's just, don't get blown out town, which unfortunately they've gotten blown out a couple of too many times under DeBoer for my taste.
Michael, let's talk about a school that is going to be expected to do very well next year, and that's LSU. How's everything between you and Lane, whatever his last name is now?
Lane Quentin Kiffin. He hasn't quit on LSU yet, so that's a good start. Portal time is here, and LSU is rating it as expected. They call him the Portal King for a reason, and he's totally retooled that LSU roster. I think they're going to be one of the more interesting teams to witness next season, Paul, because by all accounts, their fans are expecting playoffs or bust, and maybe not even making a playoffs good enough for those great fans. They want to win, and that's why you go out and get Kiffin to win big, right? So he better deliver. He better deliver immediately. I think Kiffin will win big at LSU, but I think he will end in disaster, because that's the way it always ends with Lane Quentin Kiffin. I just hope he doesn't quit on the team this time.
But does it really matter as long as they get where they want to go?
No, I don't think it does, Paul. And I think it's based on, again, the transfer portal and the players they're bringing in. Players don't seem to care about that. So, you know, he's going to spin his magic down there in Baton Rouge, and it's going to make the conference that much more entertaining, certainly. But I just don't think there's any margin for error now with teams like Indiana coming out of nowhere, with even maybe you could say Miami, who most people don't respect their coach either, yet they're in the national championship game. So we got to start respecting the guy. But you could turn these programs around overnight, and I would imagine that's the expectation of Baton Rouge.
A lot of people are talking about the Cignetti model, and they're saying you can't use time anymore as an excuse. I've already heard a couple of coaches say, well, we got a long way to go. Who do you think that affects the most currently in the SEC? Because there's a lot of new coaches, and they're all pleading patience.
Yeah, I'd say it truly affects the teams that have not really shown us that they're capable of doing it under their current coach. So maybe we're looking at, maybe a Missouri. You know, Eli Drinkwitz, I mean, how much more can we give that guy? And I do think he's a good coach, but he's not gotten them anywhere close to the relevance Indiana got seemingly overnight. I think it hurts maybe someone, and I think John Summerall of Florida, I think that's a really good hire, but they're not going to give him 3 or 4 years to prove it. He's got a, 2 years' time, I think, tops. Golish at Auburn, he's another example. Even Pete Golding, who I really like what we've seen from him in the playoff, but, you know, there cannot be any dip in Oxford, because now the expectation is to return to the playoff, which they've literally never done it till this year. So I think it's those ones that have yet to kind of prove it, like a Kirby Smart, a Josh Heupel. Well, heck, maybe even throw Josh Heupel in there, because they went so backwards after missing the playoff. It, quite frankly, Paul, it probably affects all of them.
Yeah, let me ask you about Heupel, because his athletic director came out the other day and insinuated, you know, we do it the right way here at Tennessee. I found it odd in a day when everybody is cheating and buying players with abandonment, somebody wants to stand on top of Rocky Top and try to get a prize. What do you think Danny White was really trying to say about your alma mater?
Yeah, as soon as we start hearing that, Paul, I mean, what's next? The grade point average is the highest it's been in decades, right? So, no room for excuses. People don't want to hear it that you're doing it the right way, because of, I'm not throwing any of the other SEC teams under the water, so to speak. But Georgia, Alabama, Ole Miss, LSU, if they're not doing it the right way, as Danny White says Tennessee is, then you're at a competitive disadvantage. And people do not care about that come the fall. Right way, wrong way, just deliver on the field. And it certainly seems like the excuses have already started on Rocky Top. I'm just thankful Josh Heupel didn't say that, because I don't think he's making any excuses for the performance last year.
No, and you hate to come down too hard on a guy. He beat Florida. That was a significant win on the road. He went to the playoffs a year ago, but man, that playoff game in Columbus a year and a month ago just seems like a decade ago, doesn't it?
Oh, certainly. And the fashion in which the fans showed up to Columbus, they were calling it Neyland North. There was optimism. Remember, this was a time when Ohio State had just lost to Michigan. You know, upset was in the air, and then the only thing upset was Tennessee fans about halfway through the first quarter when they realized their team didn't stand a chance. And ever since then, it seems like it's been one chaotic moment, and then at least the Nikos and that embarrassment during last spring. So there's a lot to clean up on Rocky Top, but I still have belief in Josh Heupel, but they've got to prove it this year. They're spending big time to fix the defense, completely retooled the staff and the players on that side of the football. But again, there's no time. You deliver immediately, or you're going to be in trouble.
Let's finish where we began, and that is tonight. And I'm if you're a Miami or an Indiana fan, you're excited. This is a really big deal. But to me, it seems like once again, with a 12-team playoff, this game gets somewhat lost in the shuffle. The big news this morning was Buffalo firing a playoff coach. He just can't get to the Super Bowl. It was the overtime game last night and the blown catch on Saturday. Is there any hope for college football?
Not with some of the leadership that we're seeing displayed here. And I don't even know if it's the leadership necessarily, Paul, because I know the Southeastern Conference has outstanding leadership, but that their leaders are responsible for that, for the SEC, of course. And the Big Ten is responsible for the Big Ten. And everybody is just, you know, looking at their own self-interest. And I don't know how you overcome that and resolve so many of these issues that we currently have in college athletics and primarily college football. But there is so much wrong with the sport. And the sport is fantastic. I love it. I dedicate my life to covering it. But it just seems like the people that are kind of running it, not all of them have the best interest of the sport at heart. And until we get that resolved, I don't know how these people come together and do what's right for the sport, because they're just looking out for one another.
And finally, you mentioned the SEC, and the SEC finally got tired of listening to the critics and a couple of months ago instituted the 9-game SEC rule, where everybody will play 9 games starting with the next season. I was about to ask you, do you think, but how do you think that is going to affect the SEC in relation to what we're all talking about right now, and that's getting and winning the CFP?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is such a big talking point, Paul, but I think it really boils down to what do you prioritize? And as we go further and further into this playoff era, more people prioritize the playoff, right? And reach not only winning it, obviously, but just reaching it. That's a benchmark for success in this conference. You got to get to the playoff. We just made it that much more difficult with a 9-game conference schedule. But now there's another side, and it's a side where I live on, where I don't think this sport is all about the playoff. I think this sport is about rivalries. I think it's about tradition. I think it's about the great fans that show up each and every Saturday. And now that we got 9 conference games, we can actually play one another in this conference that is at 16 teams now. And the way it was prior, I mean, you'd go 7 or 8 years without facing a team in your conference. And I thought that was foolish. So I kind of like it, the 9-game model, because we can play each other a lot more. And it's more of a conference. It's more unity there. But I do think it'll make it significantly tougher to field a team that reaches and ultimately wins the college football playoff.
Yeah, well, one thing we're definitely going to get is inferior games before in the preseason before the SEC game, because who in their right mind would play a game like Texas played this year?
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, and they were not rewarded for it, right? Now, I guess you could flip it, though, and say Oklahoma, they beat Michigan, so that was part of them reaching the college football playoff. But, the preseason, exhibition game, non-conference, whatever you want to call them, I would not schedule anyone worth anything other than my state in rival. And I think a lot of those, even like South Carolina and Kentucky and on and up, Florida's got one, Georgia, I think these – schools, if they could, they probably wouldn't say it publicly, but they'll probably get out of those games if they could, just because of this 9-game conference schedule is going to be so daunting.
No, but ultimately what you said is correct, and having covered all the playoff weekends other than tonight, the games in the regular season still mean more to me. I know we get judged on the playoff, Michael, but you and I both know how rich those Saturdays are versus these random Friday nights, Thursday nights, Wednesday nights, and now finally Monday night.
Absolutely. But again, it goes back to leadership, Paul. I think in the SEC, I think we understand that. I think in the Big Ten, I think their leadership anyway, I think it's completely oblivious to what makes this game great and the Saturdays, and they're so special. So until we all get on the same page, I don't think we're going to solve a lot of these issues, chief among them, the college football playoff.
Well, I want to say one thing. You always hear this talk about we need a commissioner in college football. How many times have you heard that? We do need one, and I've got a recommendation. Cousin Shane should be the commissioner of college football.
Hey, he'd do it for a six-pack, Paul.
He's on. Thank you, Mike. Always great to visit with you on this most important final Monday of the college football season. We're coming right back.